Thank you for standing by. At this time, the call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Robin. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody. This is the SCI call on the 14th of January, 2014. On the call today, we have Sintu Suknanan, Ron Andruff, Angie Graves, Amir Sadeh, Thomas Rickett, Ken Bauer, and Avi Doria. We have an apology from Julie Headland. Greg Sutton has already notified us that he will be late today. From staff, we have Marika Kernings, Mary Wong, and myself, Natalie Peregrine. I'd like to remind you all to please state your names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you, Ron.
Thank you, Natalie. This is Ron Andrew from the Business Constituency. First, I'd like to ask if anyone has any changes to their statements of interest since we've last met. No, hearing none, we'll move forward. And we'd like to get an approval of the agenda. Does anyone have anything they'd like to add to the agenda today? Hearing no additions, we'll move on. But before I do that, I would just like to say greetings to everyone and trust that your New Year's and your Christmas holidays, if you took them, were pleasurable ones. I, for one, was kiting in Costa Rica for a period of time, and I had a very excellent time being offline for 2 weeks, which was really amazing to actually turn the computer off and the phones. So I come back to my computer a little reluctantly, but if any of you have not yet had the experience of shutting off for a week or 10 days, I highly recommend it. So anyway, to the business at hand, thank you all for joining the call today. The first item that we have on the agenda is item number four. It's the vice chair election. And we have within our charter that we had revised, we had noted that if the chair wanted to continue in the position, then it would go out to the committee, and the committee can approve and affirm. And that happened in our last meeting. For myself, and I'm happy to stay in the chair position on your behalf for another year. And I thank you for that vote of confidence. With regard to the vice chair election, Sintra volunteered as the vice chair. She was not the current NPOC, current NPOC primary representative, rather the alternate. So we had found that Sintra and Marie Loray, who was the primary representative, were in agreement to switch positions, and that would then allow Sintra to take the vice chair position if there were no other volunteers for the vice chair. This has been an ongoing process now for a period of time, and I understand that there are no other volunteers for the vice chair at this point in time. So that would lead me to believe that we could move forward with the confirmation of Sintra as the vice chair of the SCI. That's an overview of where we stand, but I open the floor to any and all to bring their comments to the table. So please, thoughts or ideas regarding the vice chair for the SCI. Mary, please go ahead. I see your hand, and then Amr, you'll follow.
Thanks, Ron. I guess this is not so much a substantive comment, but just a note for the record and to bring everybody back to where we are, that I believe Marie Laurie sent a note to the group following from the December call where she also mentioned that she would be happy to step aside as the primary for NPOC and have Sintra be the primary so that Sintra can indeed be the vice chair of this group. I think what I'm raising here is just whether the group will consider that notification, seeing that Marie Laurie, who I believe is still the chair of NPOC, is not on the call today to confirm that. So I just wanted to get everything clear for the record.
Thank you, Mary. I'll turn to Amr, and then we'll pick up that topic. Amr, please.
Hi, this is Amr. I just raised my hand because it seemed like no one was going to make a comment. So, but I was just going to say that assuming that they have actually made the switch in accordance with the FCI charter, I have no objections at all to Sintra serving as vice chair. Thanks.
Thanks, Amr. And I see Aubrey is giving a check mark for that. So is there anyone who would be against the recommendation then that Sintra be our vice chair? If there's no one against that, and then X mark would be the signal to me in the Adobe room, or you're certainly welcome to raise your hand and speak. And then the second element would be, as Mary has just rightly said, are we in agreement with the fact that the statement from Marie Leray to switch places and become the alternate and putting Sintra in the primary role, that satisfies our need. For my part as the chair, it certainly does. If anyone have anything contrary to that idea, I'd welcome that comment now. Amr, I see your hand is up again, or was that still the same one?
No, that's a new one, Ron. I was just going to say that I guess that really depends on the MPOC charter and how they manage appointments to the SCI. So maybe Sintra could help us out with that. Thanks.
Thank you, Amr. Sintra, do you have any thoughts you can add to that?
Yes, thank you, Ron. There's nothing in our charter specifically dealing with SCI appointments. So it's really up to the executive committee to decide who they'd like as representation. We're all volunteers, so it really is a matter of manpower rather than prescriptive within the charter. So there's no difficulty with the NPOC side of things. Unfortunately, I don't know, Mary Lord is not on the call today, but I can confirm her email. And as far as I know, there is no difficulty within NPOC with me holding the primary position and as well with me acting as vice chair of this group.
Thank you very much, Sintra. So then with that, I would like to welcome you to the vice chair role within the SCI. And we will now make a note of that in the record, as well as make the changes within the membership, pardon me, the membership of the SCI, that you are now the primary. So thank you very much for that, and thank you all for your comments on it. Sintra, your hand is up to speak again, please.
Yes, thank you, Ron. I'd just like to thank you all for your endorsement, and as well, Mary, thank you so much for helping us deal with the specific aspects of this, you know, this appointment to facilitate it's moving forward.
Excellent. Thank you, Sintra. Great. So it's nice to have our elections behind us, and we can move on with the business at hand for the coming period. That moves us now to item number 5 on the agenda, and that's the working group self-assessment. If you recall, on our last meeting, the SCI members agreed to go ahead with including the self-assessment tool in the revision of the working group guidelines, and Ken Bauer provided a markup of that. Our next step would be for staff to put the red line of the revised working group guidelines out for public comment. There are some other changes that we have in the mix, so to speak, which are included in our agenda today, and that has to do with the GNSO operating procedures. So if we're all in agreement, I just want to make sure that the SCI is fully ready to go with the self-assessment tool and that we can instruct staff to go forward and put this out for public comment. And then once the comments are collected and the changes are incorporated, the next step will be to submit the revised procedures to the council for consideration along with the motion for approval, which we're going to talk about shortly. So that's just a little bit of background on that. Comments, questions, thoughts with regard to the working group self-assessment. The floor is open. Amr, please.
Thanks, Ron. It's Amr. I thought the report that was circulated with the results of the self-assessment on the Thick Who Is working group was a pretty cool report. Had a lot of information that I think anyone reading would find interesting. Although it was fairly easy to go through, it just did seem a little long to me. I was just wondering if anybody else who had gone through the report had that same feeling or not, and I was just wondering if this report is meant to be circulated amongst the GNSO counselors, and if so, would a long report like that for a working group self-assessment, would it be realistic that counselors or anyone would go through every report for every working group or not, or is this just something for documentation to be used, for example, by the ATRT in the future? Thanks.
Thanks, Amr. I believe Ken is on the call, so I'm going to let him speak to that. But before I do, my understanding is that this report was, in fact, directed at us at the SCI, and it gave a tremendous amount of detail in terms of the responses and how that went forward so that we, in turn, could then make our determinations as to how we felt about the results of the survey itself. But Ken, perhaps you can shine a brighter light on that, and also with regard to the question, will this be going to the counselors, or to whom will this report actually be directed? Ken?
Thanks, Ron. This is Ken. appreciate the comment, Amr. Yes, it's true. The report is a little on the long side. One of the things that makes it long is the inclusion of various tables and graphics and charts. You know, they take up quite a bit of space. Then there's there was also at the end of it, I included the actual screenshots from the self-assessment itself, and that added another, I don't know, 10 pages or something like that. So, yeah, it does. It is long, and I'm not sure exactly how to shorten it. I thought about that at one point, and I wasn't able to come up with anything. I did do some editing to it, believe it or not, even though it's still long. My intention in writing it, because it's the very first one, was to make it a model going forward, meaning that we would send this to the council. So this is the work of the SCI, and the SCI says, okay, we've created an assessment instrument, we've created a set of protocols and procedures and questions, we've tested it, we've even written the first report, which we're suggesting would be a model for how other reports would be fashioned. Now, maybe over time, we could drop having to put the questionnaire at the end and things of that type, and maybe I could look at ways to see if we could short-circuit it. Maybe there's an executive summary that could be prepared that would just highlight the key elements of it. But yeah, that was the intent. Is that helpful?
Thanks, Ken. Absolutely. So, if I heard you correctly, you could actually do kind of an executive summary up front, a short paragraph or one pager, and then add the full body afterwards. Is that what you're intimating?
I suppose that's one way. This is Ken again. I suppose that's one way to do it. In the when I did the ICANN stakeholder survey, I made the executive report a separate document. So it had it had its own structure. It was independent. But yeah, I mean, it would be possible to create a sort of executive summary at the front. But that would just make the report then 3, 4, 5 pages longer than it is already. So I don't know. I'm open to suggestions there.
Well, I don't think we have to, we have to kind of focus on the length of a document right now, and you're the expert in this area. So I would just say that going forward, we might just look at it from the point of view that, yes, we may want to streamline the document, but at this stage of the game, information is our friend, so more information is better than less information. I agree with Amr, people don't read as much as we would hope they would. But the idea would be if you can just do a short executive summary, one paragraph, the net of this
survey says thus and such in a paragraph or two up front, and then people can drill down as much or as little as they wish might be the way forward. But I think that the document is excellent, and the good news is that, as I understand it, we are all in agreement on this particular element. So when it comes to the working group assessment, at this stage, this will become a change of the GNSO operating procedures. And so as I noted earlier, we had agreed to go forward with this, and we just need now to send this out for public comment and get that back. But we had also said, and maybe I could look to staff with regards to the timing on this, should we send this out now to public comment, get it back, and then collect that to send that on with the resubmitting of a motion? Or should we send both of these out for public comment simultaneously? Perhaps someone from staff could give me some focus. Mary?
Thanks, Ron, and I guess it'll come as no surprise. Given the direction that we got from the council and some earlier indications, it probably would be best to have them both out for public comment at the same time. Indeed, to have any proposed changes that the SCI is planning to propose within a certain period of time to all go out at the same time. This is because of the public comment period is running for a certain amount of time, plus the reply period, plus the reports that will then need to be prepared and sent up to the council. So if we can do it in one shot, in one document, in one package, that would probably be helpful. And this may then affect what you folks would like to do and when you'd like to finalize the resubmission of a motion and the other items there.
Thanks, Mary. So I'm seeing check marks from Amr and Avery, so we all seem to be moving in that same direction. So let's then agree, unless anyone has something to say against this, that the working group self-assessment is ready to ship, and we will now pick up the next element, which is the resubmission of a motion, because those two would probably go out together at the same time. Is anyone opposed to that? Moving forward then to item number six, the resubmission of a motion. Seeing no one against that idea, let's move on to that topic then. And resubmitting a motion, this text was sent to the SCI to the final version to circulate to our stakeholder groups and constituencies for approval. And pardon me, and we had a consensus call which would end on 8 January. And there were no objections received to the language that was in that text. And so unless there are any objections or changes right now that people would like to bring forward, we will then send this forward as a full consensus item from the SCI to the, again, out for public comment and it becomes part of the revised GNSO operating procedures. Anyone have any thoughts or comments they'd like to bring to the table with regard to the resubmission of a motion? Anne, please, go ahead.
Hi, I'm only raising my hand just to thank Greg for his diligent work in connection with this text, because I think it's particularly clear, and I know I have missed a couple meetings, but I think you guys have done a really good job, and that it's easy, when we put it out for public comment, it'll be easy for people to understand. So it's just thank you.
Indeed, Anne. Thank you. And a thank you goes out to you for having, really stayed on top of this one early on before you handed it off to Greg to wrap up. I think you did a really, really good job. Greg, I see you're blushing, and I'm happy to see it. But I think that you and Anne did a very good job of this, and you kept it on the table to make sure that we did the final work on it. So I put my congratulations out to everyone on the committee for staying with this one all the way through. And it's really, this is one of the longer ones we've had on our table, but I think that the work product we can all be very satisfied with. So thank you all for the effort. And I guess that brings us back, Mary, then to the point where we're ready to send over the working group self-assessment and the resubmission of a motion for public comment. So the next steps on these two items would be, Mary?
I believe that I'll confirm it with Julie, but I believe what we'll do is staff will then prepare the documents and open a public comment forum and all the usual things that go along with it, obviously informing the SGI along the way and certainly once that's done.
And also informing the council and the council chair, of course.
Yes, of course.
Excellent. Excellent. Great. So that means that we are now moving on to item number 7 on the agenda. And this was the possible inclusion of a waiver or exception in the GNSO operating procedures. This item, as I understand, we had Thomas, let me just check my notes here, sorry. This was staff had asked for volunteers to join Marie Laure on this topic after Mikey had moved off of the SCI. And so I'm putting out the call again one more time. If someone can jump in to give Marie Laure some assistance on reviewing this, these are subgroups that are really just intended to go out and kind of gather up as much information and put forward a proposal, even if it's a straw man proposal, something for the larger committee to chew on and work on. So is there anyone else who might be able to join Marie Laure on this work? Perhaps I could look to Anne or Greg. Someone with a bit of legal background might be helpful in this one.
I'm not sure anybody wants me on this one because I think the context in which this came up, there was an IPC matter where there was a motion that was submitted late and the IPC did not agree to have that motion considered, even though everyone acknowledged that everybody wanted to vote for whatever it was, is my recollection. IPC insisted on following the existing procedure so that there would not in the future be any sort of, you know, I guess, gaming on waiver of the timely submission of motions. So I don't know if anybody really wants me on this particular subgroup, because I think that the impetus behind the subgroup was to try to make sure that there's a mechanism for waiving procedural requirements at GNSO Council, and I'm not sure that's an idea that IPC supports generally. So I'm not sure where we're going with it.
Well, Anne, that is not such a bad thing. Point, counterpoint. You know, what we're looking for the larger body is something to chew on. And so that may or may not be. But let me take Greg and Avery and you give some consideration. So, Greg, please, you go first.
This is Greg Shatton for the record. I'll confess to probably being the prime mover in the IPC on that position. And for me, it was actually a value-neutral proposition in the sense that what I was concerned about and opposed with was the idea of just kind of having no procedure to have a waiver and just kind of making it up as we all went, or as the GNSO went along. So I'm happy to serve on the committee, subcommittee, drafting committee, because I actually believe that there should be a procedure that would allow for such a waiver to come in into existence, but that you can't just do it kind of on the fly. So, indeed, this is kind of exactly what I wanted to have happen out of the objection that we placed or that our counselors placed in terms of this, which is to have an appropriate parliamentary procedure to deal with this. You know,
well, Ron, I think you've got your volunteer. You're good to go.
Yeah, I would love to have, misery loves company, so I hope to have, company on this.
Well, you certainly do, Greg. Thank you very much for that, and thank you also, Anne, for your stepping up and chatting about it. But if Greg wants to take this on with Marie Laure, that would be very helpful. Marie Laure is a relatively new member to the SCI, and
If I recall correctly, in Buenos Aires, I strong-armed her a little bit to participate on this group just to I really feel it's always good to push people into the deep end of the pool so they can swim with the rest of us very quickly, and she was gracious enough to accept that. So I would then ask that perhaps you might send her a note directly, or perhaps Mary Wong can connect the two of you, as she's our kind of our staff liaison today, just to let her know that the two of you will be working together. That's excellent.
That's great.
Avery, please go ahead. I see your hand is up.
Yeah, no, I had just put it up before when Anne was basically saying she wouldn't be appropriate because of her issues, and I was thinking, since we've worked by consensus, that's a perfect time for someone to volunteer. So I just wanted to get that point in. Thanks.
Thank you, Aubrey. Excellent. Okay, so moving right along. So that we'll look to Greg and to Marie-Laure to come back with some further report on that item of waiver exception at on our next call. Item number five, and this was the voting by email. And in this particular case, we had Aubrey and Thomas working together to come up with some thoughts in terms of a subcommittee. And they did some work on an approach, and they sent some comments to the list. And I understand Thomas has also some further information on that. So perhaps I can turn the floor over to you, Thomas, and Avery to pick up from here, please.
Sure. This is Thomas. I'm more than happy to volunteer taking the first approach to this. And then I will pass on to Avery for additional remarks. I have outlined a couple of thoughts that have been sent to the list earlier, and my assumption was that the SCI wanted to keep the voting by email as an exception for certain circumstances. And in the light of that, I have phrased a couple of my points. I'm not going to read them to you, but just for the benefit of those who did not have the time to go through them, there were a couple of basic ideas that I would like to share with you, and which will appear in a different light when Avi will later chime in and make her points. Now, my first assumption was, again, that voting by email should rather be the exception. The second assumption would be that this is meant for scenarios where no further discussion by the council is required, so that the community had the opportunity to follow all the discussions by the council either on an email list or in a physical or remote meeting. Then the chair has the discretion to allow for email voting both for individuals as well as for the whole council. And the idea behind that is that let's assume that there is an item that needs to be dealt with in a timely fashion and that can't wait until the next council meeting, that then rather than calling for an extraordinary council meeting, which is usually a difficult task to achieve, the vote could then be taken by email. And the idea further is that this system should not be set up for people to be able to game it, i.e. that it should not be possible for individuals or groups to look at the voting behavior of their colleagues and then chime in at the very last minute and try to make their vote a decisive one and thereby sort of remote control what the outcome of that would be. And then I've added a couple of procedural points as to how the council secretariat could support this. For example, they would receive the emails containing the votes not on the public list, but they would get them as a secretariat. There would be a time window during which votes can be submitted, and upon expiry of that, the GNSO secretariat would then publish the outcome of the vote. Now, as you can see, this has been designed intentionally to keep things quite narrow. But then I had a very good discussion with Avri, who said that there might not be the need for keeping things narrow as long as the rules are transparent, and that actually introducing the possibility of email voting might help the GNSO Council to become more effective. But I leave it at that, and I'd like to hand over to Avri to chime in with her thoughts on this.
Thanks.
Thank you, Thomas. Avri.
Yeah, thanks. This is Avri speaking. So, yeah, I did argue with the second point. Indeed, the first one is true. The bylaws do require that there have been substantive dialogue. Now, you know, it's face-to-face, but can be teleconference, of course, and it's evolved over time. The substantive dialogue before any vote is something that, you know, I don't argue with that. That has to be the case. But substantive dialogue can perhaps be more than just, the face-to-face / teleconferences. So in my view, it didn't need to be just an exceptional thing. For example, there are times when someone says, you know, My constituency is still talking about it. We haven't had enough time. We want to defer the vote. Now, why defer for a whole month when we're really probably talking about a week? So in those kind of cases, it should be possible to sort of not have the deferment be a postponement of a month, but really be a deferment long enough to get something done. There are other times when a discussion may indeed terminate near the end of the meeting, and there may be a little bit more discussion to be had that can be had on an email list that everyone, including people who were absent from the meeting, could participate in and come to a point and then just sort of have the chair able to say, okay, I think we're ready for a vote. Does anybody object to us doing a vote online? You know, 2 days' notice, okay, we'll have a vote online. Now, in terms of the gaming, that's a good point, but I think that there are ways around it. Certainly, we don't want to do secret votes because we don't do secret votes, but we certainly could do a vote that doesn't reveal how a person has voted until all the votes are in and the vote period is over. Or alternatively, you can go in the other direction and sort of say, anybody can change their votes up until the end of the voting period. And, you know, so everybody's gaming everybody. And so you could go either way, but it gets transparent and it gets, you know, to the point where gaming it becomes something you look stupid by doing. And then there's council peer pressure to deal with and not that. So yes, a lot of this was, and those are only two cases. Maybe there are other cases where, you know, just the council meeting monthly is a long time. And so, you know, perhaps there is a two-stage process to calling one of these votes, any objection to calling a vote, and then the vote. And so there's definitely processes to be talked about, but I would definitely was looking at that as another tool to speed up the council, make it more effective, get us to communicate more, and we're already starting to communicate more between meetings, etc. So thank you.
Thank you, Avri. And for those who are not aware of it, Avri was a, if I'm not mistaken, two-time GNSO council chair. So she knows very well how that operates and what the needs are. So those comments are very well taken. Thank you, Aubrey. Anne, I see your hand is raised.
Yes, thank you, Ron. This is Anne with IPC. And I realize I've actually been a bit out of the loop, and that's primarily, I apologize, due to some litigation that I've had. But I want to ask a few questions about this. I admit to not having followed it closely on the list, and I want to understand it a whole lot better than I understand it right now before I can discuss with our constituency. A question arose on our call this morning toward the end of the call as to, you know, why email voting is needed given the proxy system that's in place. And I gather by what Thomas and Avi are saying is that most often that arises in connection with action that needs to be taken between meetings. And I think right now, is it the case that they end up calling a special council meeting for that purpose when actually an email vote would be more efficient? Is that...
That's certainly my understanding, but I would actually turn to Thomas and Aubrey to respond, but that's how I see it as well, that it is a special case, and rather than having to convene a meeting, it's about sending emails. Aubrey or Thomas, could you answer that question as you see it?
I see it exactly the way you do.
Thank you, Thomas.
Yep.
And I guess in that context, what I'm just really trying to make notes and gather information in relation to this. What would constitute, in that particular circumstance, a participation in a discussion? That principle of participation in substantive discussion.
Well, I see Aubrey's hand. Aubrey, please go ahead.
Yeah, so indeed I am thinking that there has to have at least been some of the live discussion of the teleconference or the face-to-face. What I tend to not believe is that that conversation needs to necessarily have terminated in live session or in live telecommunications. And I think the email channel, which is the only channel we've got now, I wish there were others, but there aren't, the email channel should be an effective part of the council, you know, communications. But I do think it is reasonable that there should have been at least, so I don't think of it necessarily as for an issue that came up between meetings, but I think of an issue that needs to be resolved, preferably before the next meeting. Thanks.
Thank you, Aubrey. Thomas, please go ahead.
Thanks, Ron. And in response to your question, if my memory doesn't fail me, I guess the original question was brought to the SEI because of a scenario where a counselor was disconnected during a call and could not submit his or her vote. And the question was whether that could be accepted at a later stage. And I guess that's part of the reason why I crafted a couple of points that I jotted down quite narrowly, because I really wanted to ensure that this is meant to be dealing with exemptions, and I already broadened it for email voting to be allowed in scenarios where the council chair determines that a whole vote and not only votes submitted by individual councillors can be accepted by email. But I guess the question that, or the points that Aubrey made are very valid, and that is the more fundamental question as to whether the SAI thinks that we should consider taking the council work to the next level and maybe become more efficient by allowing for votes being taken in between meetings. So I guess that in terms of approaching the response to this question that we've been tasked with, maybe it would be, or I guess for me it would be interesting to get some direction from the group as to where they would like to move with this, and then the wording can be adjusted either way.
Thank you, Thomas. Anne, please go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Ron. I have some general concern about going broader on this, and again, I'm just asking a lot of questions at this point, certainly not taking a position on behalf of IPC. I watch C-SPAN, and I see you know, who's in there voting in the Congress and who's not. And I know that's certainly not the intent here, but sometimes people get awfully, awfully busy, and I think they might think, oh, well, you know, I heard the discussion on that, so I'll just, you know, vote by email, and that they might actually give it, you know, less consideration and not be present for the second discussion because they've participated mostly in the first discussion, and that it might get kind of fractured. I mean, when I think, for example, about a tabled motion, I don't know, does motion ever get tabled after it's been discussed and then somebody moves to table it with that sort of discretionary, we don't want to vote on it till next time? Or is a motion always tabled prior to any discussion on the motion? My only point being that you might have two very vigorous discussions, but how would you determine whether the counselor had, you know, really participated in discussion if they were there for the first one and then not for the second one?
Thank you, Anne. I see Mary has her hand up, and then I'll come to Greg. Mary, please.
Thanks, Ron. And this is just specific to Anne's question about whether motions, I guess I'm going to use the word deferred because I understand that the word table has different meanings in different contexts and cultures, that the practice of the council is that even where there is discussion or whether there has been discussion, that a stakeholder group can ask for it to be deferred. And if it's deferred, it usually is only deferred until the next meeting. So
yes.
I realize this doesn't answer your question, Anne, but there's nothing to stop someone from asking for a deferral prior to the discussion, but the practice normally is to allow for discussion, or even in asking for a deferral, the counselor normally, customarily, does not intend to cut off any discussion at that point either.
Yeah, that's what I'm, if I may just follow up, Ron, what I'm kind of getting at is in a situation where a motion is discussed and there is a deferral that the chair agrees to, and then there's a second discussion in a later meeting, it would seem that a counselor should be participating in both discussions, full discussions, rather than just email voting because they've been in one or the other. For example, as an example.
Understood. Thank you, Anne. Mary, do you want to respond to that, or is your hand up from the last time?
It's not so much a response, but a further follow-up. And, again, because there is no rule at the moment, what would, I think, generally happen in the kind of scenario that Anne describes is if a counselor attends the first discussion and then the motion gets deferred and comes up again at the next discussion slash meeting, if the counselor can't attend that second meeting, then the only way a vote can be registered is if the counselor appoints a proxy for that meeting. And I realize that's different from here, but I just wanted to point to the fact that in appointing a proxy, the GNSO rules do prescribe that the person is, I suppose, properly instructed, I can't remember the exact words, as to the course of voting according to the constituency of the stakeholder group rules. I'm not sure how that can be enforced, but there is some sense that it's not just someone stepping in and following his or her own inclinations without any reference to prior discussion or consultation.
Right, and another question that arises in the context of this language is, and Greg, if you'll indulge me for a minute, this, for example, it says generally if a counselor's present physically or remotely in a meeting, they should vote. We're not suggesting here, are we, that a counselor could say while present in the meeting, I'll vote by email later? We're not suggesting that, are we?
No, I don't think that this is Ron speaking for the record. I don't think that's the case, Anne. I think what we're talking about, again, is this is a very specific case, and it's the exception rather than the rule, as I see it. Greg has been very patient. Let's let Greg jump in for a moment and then pick up Aubrey, and then if you'd like to come back, Anne.
Sure.
Greg?
Greg, please go ahead.
Thanks. I think it's helpful for this discussion to kind of separate two different cases, if you will. The first case is the between meeting email, so that a special meeting doesn't have to be called. You know, that seems to be a fairly non-controversial proposal, as long as you know something has been appropriately discussed beforehand. I think the issue of email voting during a meeting, as opposed to being on the conference call, I guess raises other issues because they're not able to participate in the debate or hear the debate, and it kind of raises the question of whether, therefore, there is kind of a lack of participation, and you know that at that point maybe it's not appropriate. I mean, I recognize there are issues sometimes when somebody's on a call for 50 minutes and then they have to get off for some reason, and they could only vote by email. So, you know, it's a nuanced question. I don't have a doctrinaire answer to it, but I'm you know concerned by the idea that somehow you know meetings could turn into just kind of email that you know half the people could be on email and not participating somehow. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg. I think speaking to that point of, you know, it's creating a changing dynamic within the council. I don't think we have to be concerned about that in so much as there's a couple of things. One, this is an exception rather than the rule. Two, it's the chair's discretion, and we may even want to tighten that up to say the chairs and the vice chairs have to have unanimity on it or something to, you know, make sure that these kind of things are a little tighter. But I don't think that is the case. That we're not walking down that path at this stage. Avery, please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. As I said, I'm thinking of it as broader. Now, no way am I thinking of it as therefore enabling every council member to skip council and just do it by reading and email voting. First of all, I don't think that would happen. But even if it didn't, I mean, there are rules about councillors needing to participate, and people's charters and various stakeholder groups have rules about participating in the meetings and such. I don't see us removing the need of there having been substantive discussion in meetings or whatever. But I am thinking that it can be more intentionally, like, for example, we've been talking about this for the last 15 minutes. We got to get a vote in today or it waits a month, but we still seem to be discussing it. So can we continue discussing it for the next 10, 15 minutes until the meeting ends and then, you know, continue talking on the list for the next week, at which point we'll call for an email ballot? Any objection to doing that? No objection to doing that. So that's the kind of tool that I'm looking for us to build that allows, you know, and not at the chair or even the chair plus vice chair's thing, but with the general consensus of the group. Anytime, it's kind of like almost the consent agenda in you either have full consensus to do it or you wait until the next meeting. And so it's just a tool to keep things moving and get things on. And I think this is consistent with the request, and Mary did put it in the chat, the request that had come through from Jonathan in terms of looking for a little bit of flexibility in how we use the tool of email voting. So to call it exception means there's all kinds of rules about when you mustn't do it, as opposed to it being, you know, there are ways to call it into action that keep it from being abused. Thanks.
Thanks, Avery. With that, I'm going to bring this topic to a close because we have one more item on the agenda that I would like to discuss briefly and ask that members of the committee would please bring their thoughts to the list on this. Perhaps we can start redlining this draft document that Avery and Thomas put forward. It's a good base effort, and we're very grateful for that. If anyone has any other last comment on this, I'm happy to take it. Otherwise, I'd like to move on to the last item on our agenda. I see Greg and I see Ann.
Okay, I will go ahead and comment that if Avery and Thomas think that it might be beneficial to, after these questions have been posed, to circulate any slightly different draft, that might be helpful. And I don't see, is there any reference here about a maximum voting period, or would there be, we've all talked about the voting period during which an email vote must be cast. It seems it's been a matter of discussion, but I'm not sure I see. We see 48 hours notice, but I don't see how long you can keep your vote hanging out there.
Well, that may be something then we should be to looking at a little more closely than Anne in terms of with the red line, if I may.
Yeah.
That makes sense?
Yeah.
But I was wondering if Thomas and Avery would agree to take another look based on this discussion and possibly, you know, jointly circulate something else, or I would also volunteer to work on that given some of the comments that have been made. So it's been a good discussion.
That's excellent. That's excellent. So I see Avery's hand is up. Avery, would you be willing, you and Thomas, to try to bring this into a little tighter form with working with Anne?
I can't speak for Thomas, obviously. I'm certainly willing to work more on a draft, but we still have a fundamental decision that this group has to make, is whether we're working in the narrow sense or we're working a broader sense, a narrow sense that Thomas was thinking of and the broader sense that I do. And I have a feeling that which of those we do will have implications on the how it's done. So I just wanted to bring that up. Thanks.
Thanks, Aubrey. All right. Thomas, please go ahead.
Yeah, this is just to echo what Avery said. I'm still waiting for, would very much welcome if we could get some general guideline in terms of which direction we want to take. And in response to Anne, if you scroll down at the end of the page and at the beginning of the second page, I have at least given some guidance so that you would need at least 48 hours notice on weekdays prior to the start of the voting time window, and the end date or the deadline would also be published. So I wanted to have a little bit of flexibility for the council leadership on that, which would also help to respond to certain scenarios. Let's say if there was a case such as Avery's example, where just one group needs to reflect on one thing, then maybe the time frame can be shorter than in other cases.
Thanks, Thomas. So I hear you very clearly. People are looking to see, are we going to go left or go right with this? And I'm wondering if we could develop just a little tighter framework with those two options more clearly spelled out, pardon me, for the benefit of the rest of the members to kind of get a feeling for which direction we should be going, because that seems to be the area that's very vague at this moment. But I think that the idea of the live discussion before this could happen is very clear. I think it would bring more efficiency to the council, as has been mentioned, which is a good thing. If the voting happens, as Avery has suggested, that it would be perhaps done privately, but everything would be revealed at the end, so there's complete transparency, and that it's up to the chair's discretion. These are the notes that I've made, and if we could move in that direction for our next call, that would be very helpful. We're coming up with 1 minute before the hour ends, and we started 5 minutes late, so if you'll just bear with me one moment more, I'd like to go to item number nine, our final item on the agenda, and that's the review of the GNSO Working Group Guidelines on Consensus Levels. this document, the background on this document was circulated again yesterday by Julie, in so much as this form that we requested these things be submitted to us. And when you look through this, we had a lot of discussion even within the SCI on consensus with regard to our own charter, whether full consensus or consensus where we had small minority disagreement would be the better way to go. And it ended up that we've gone the route of full consensus. But in that discussion, there was a lot of dialogue about whether or not 5 levels of consensus were in fact needed, because it's very thin slices, if you will, and it seems that ICANN always hews to the highest level of consensus, which is the first one, full consensus. So this is actually a very apt conversation to come back to our table, and I note that in this document that was circulated yesterday, the background document, that the Council requests that the SCI to review the current levels of consensus, and specifically request the SCI to review and, if deemed appropriate, recommend revised or additional language to apply to situations where working groups may reach sufficient consensus against a particular proposal, such that the appropriate consensus level cannot accurately be described as no consensus / divergence. So there's a lot that has to be discussed about this. I know it came up in the INGO working group. And I believe, Thomas, you were the chair of that body, if I'm not mistaken. Am I correct there?
You are correct, and I, if you want me to, I can fill you in on some of the background with this.
Well, that's why I'm asking. So this call is now going to come to an end, but because Thomas is very fluent on what we're talking about, I'm going to suggest that we just roll this over to the next meeting and put it up right in the first position of our next call. And then, Thomas, if you wouldn't mind being prepared to give some overview and background on what that was, then we can perhaps then pull together a support team, a subgroup that will work on this and bring something back to the committee to talk about, as we just did with the voting by email. So... Would that be in order, Thomas? Would you be good with that?
Sure.
Very good. I see Amr has already put his hand up to join the committee. I wonder if there's any others on this group that would like to, on this call, that would like to participate. Is that Greg? Would you like to participate?
Yes, I would. I was also on the INGO working group, and actually one of the vocal participants in the discussion about this very topic.
Excellent.
So, again,
Well,
feel like...
I'm sorry. Go ahead. I beg your pardon.
I was going to say, as with the previous issue where I also was a loudmouth, I feel that it's only my responsibility once I've raised an issue to try to settle it as well. Thank you.
Very good. Very good. And I see Cintra's hand is up to join as well. Cintra?
Yes, that's correct. I'll be happy to support this group.
Very good. So we have then Amr, Greg, Cintra, and Thomas. So you might even consider getting on a call amongst yourselves to start working on that right away, if you like, or we can do as I previously recommended, suggesting Thomas bring us all up to speed in the next call. Whichever works the best for you is fine for me. Anne, I see your hand is up.
Yes, it's Ron. Thank you. It's Anne with IPC. And just a quick procedural question. I was under the impression that working group consensus was part of the PDP manual, which causes me to ask a procedural question about how this could land at SCI. Can you guys straighten me out on that one? Am I wrong? Working group consensus is not part of the PDP manual?
Mary, please. Go ahead. If you have an answer, I certainly do not.
Thanks, Ron. And it's the PDP manual is part of the operating procedures of the SCI, which would make them under the SCI remit anyway. But in this specific instance, it is actually the working group guidelines that is in question, and that those are also within the remit of the SCI.
Well, when you say within the remit, it's to determine how effective they've been, or it's to... You see where I'm coming from, the problem that I have that SCI is not a policy development group. And so I'm a little confused about, are we to comment on how effective this has been, or is what SCI would be doing, or to recommend changes based on how effective it's been?
And there's a document that was circulated yesterday, and it came to me in a Word form. It's called, the title of that document is Background on GNSO Working Group Guidelines Consensus Levels. And that document is basically the request that's come to us, and that provides, you know, which group sent this request, which rules or processes are they referring to. And then that details all of that, and then it goes on to ask, please outline the problem. And then number four is, what specific changes do you propose to address the problem? And number five, do you have any additional suggestions for making the rules processes easier
right.
to administer?
Okay, so I apologize for not having read that, but I would like to ask Greg to, as in his participation on this group, to verify, you know, where IPC is on in relation to this procedurally, and maybe Greg and I can, I don't know, talk offline about it. I don't know where the request came from, and I'm sorry I haven't read that.
That's fine, but once you do that, that will flesh out a lot of that those queries that you have in your mind. And that's why I've asked Thomas specifically to give us a sense of what this is, and then maybe that's our baseline question, is this within our remit or not, and we can take it from there on our next call. All right. So having introduced that item, now that's really all I wanted to do today. Thank you very much for the subgroup jumping on top of that right away and participating to help us find our way through that one. With that, we come to agenda item number 10, any other business, and I open the floor to any comments or thoughts that someone would like to add. Seeing none, I will release you from your work and thank all of you very much for getting on the call and being so helpful today. It's been a very good call, as usual. The collegiality is much appreciated. So thank you all for joining the call. I think our next call is scheduled for the 28th of January, if I'm not mistaken. It's noted on the right-hand side under our actions. And so with that, I and Natalie has just confirmed that so. So thank you very much, everyone, and our best wishes for the rest of the week, and we'll talk to you online or in person in 2 weeks. Thank you again.
Thanks, Ron. Thank you, everybody.
Bye for now.
Thank you, Ron. Thank you, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you very much, Robin. You may now stop the recordings. Thank you.
And thank you.